Abby? This may be considered a mark, as you can see, of disrespect for the Rebbe.
You say close. What do you mean by so close?
Within Dalai Lama's.
Within Dalai Lama's.
Yeah, it says literally behind him. Okay?
I see.
Yeah.
When you say Dalai Lama's, is this Dalai Lama's in all directions?
Yeah.
Talking about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Point is that if you're close by the other person and you move, you're liable to disturb him while he's trying to concentrate on Sage Ministry. You see, that's the whole problem. Yeah.
What are you doing in New York when you got everybody on top?
You do the best that you can under the circumstances. What can I tell you, Stan?
That's right here. You can't move
right.
Back at all.
Right. And what do you do in Springfield when they start repetition of the Shmona Esrei before you're long finished with the dominant?
Yeah.
Zolmanton. Some people are rushing, right. And others are such fast dominants, I cannot keep up to them.
You can, neither. None of us can, neither. That's for sure.
So the question is, how could Rabbi Yirmi have done this? Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rav. Didn't Rabbi Yehuda say in the name of Rav, Li'olam al-Yispalil Odom, that a man should not daven lo keneged Rabbo, but lo acharei Rabbo, neither facing his rabbi nor behind his rabbi?
Oh boy.
Betanya Rabbi Eliezer, Emel. And we learned in another place where Rabbi Eliezer says, Al-Yispalil acharei Rabbo, that if a person davens right behind his rebbe, shalom rabbi, and if he simply says shalom to his teacher, I'll come back to that in a second. Well, let me explain right now.
Can I go back even further? Where you said neged rabbo. You said facing.
Facing, literally opposite. Yeah.
But if you're facing east to daven, and you're saying you meet it, and I'm facing
okay.
east, I don't know.
So if we take a look at the first Rashi up at the top, so he doesn't take it. Rashi's comp is very interesting. It explains it better. Take a look over there. First line on the top. You see? Keneged Rabbo. It says Eitzel Rabbo. He says it doesn't mean facing his rabbi, but it means actually right next to his rabbi, right near him. And he adds the following. It says, Ki Ilohim Shobin. It's as though he puts himself on the basis of equality with his Rebbe.
Oh.
In other words, by standing so close to him, it's as though
he was
equal. Just as a big shot, you know, as my Rebbe is, you see. Well, of course, this already is, you know, a lack of proper decorum towards your Rebbe, whom you should respect and so on.
Okay. David, we're going to have to watch our step from now on when we go next to Dr. Miller, huh?
All right. Now, here's a question. Okay. I know Saint Shalom the Rabbi. I mean, we would say that what's so wrong with saying hello to your rabbi, right? But take a look again at the Rashi.
Yeah, what is he
Shalom the Rabbi. You see in the second line over there, it says, Kishor kol odem, as you would act to anyone else, we say simply Shalom Alecha, you know, peace to you. Lo omar lo Shalom Alecha Rabbi. And he did not say to him, peace unto you, my rabbi. In other words, to a Rebbe, they don't simply say Shalom, you have to say Shalom Rebbe. Peace be unto you, Rebbe. V'hamachzir Shalom l'Rabbo. And again the same thing, he answers. The Rebbe says hello to him, how should he answer him? He should also say Shalom Alecha Rabbi. In other words, you have to answer with the proper respect, you see, to the Rebbe. V'hacholek al yeshiva sol shel Rabbo. This, according to Rashi, to other authorities, means that if your rabbi has a yeshiva in town, don't you go and organize another yeshiva in competition with him. That's one interpretation. There are others.
Someone who had a yeshiva.
Yeah. There are others who say that the meaning of this particular one is not the way I explained it, but there's a different explanation. Namely that if the Rebbe is there, you shouldn't, you know, get up over there and say something, you know, in the presence of the Rebbe. The Rebbe should have the authority, you know, to speak. Look, and if he invites comments and things like that, it's another story. But you know,
don't take his place.
Right. So that these are at least two different possible interpretations of what we mean by that.
Reasonable.
Right. The Omer Dover. I mean, you could according to one authority, even in another community. But that already is extreme. But in the same community, don't open up a rival yeshiva to your Rebbe. In another community, you know, there would be more choice.
Would that apply to shuls too?
Yeah? That's a good question. The answer is not necessarily.
So if I went to the start at 10 o'clock minyan for Maariv,
yeah,
then that wouldn't offend anyone.
If you were able to
get
yourself
a floating minyan or something.
Yeah, if you had a floating minyan, if you were able to get a minyan together, it's permissible, sure. Yeah. And he says something that he did not hear from his Rebbe. This again is a little bit more difficult, I mean, to try to understand.
Like
the easiest way to try to understand it would be that he says something which he did not hear from his Rebbe. It would seem to me that perhaps what they're trying to say is that he attributes something to his Rebbe which he did not hear from him.
I would say a fakir, that he brings in a taich that the Rebbe would be counter to what the Rebbe would say.
Yeah.
That he heard some other Rebbe. In other words, get an opinion from another Rebbe, which would be contrary to what his Rebbe
said.
There's
a possibility. I mean, I was going to say that another possibility is simply the fact, you know, that a person should always transmit what he has heard from his Rebbe, but not transmit things that he did not hear from his Rebbe. Well, there are difficulties with each of these explanations. Of course, remember, for justification for my last interpretation would be the fact that in those days, before the writing down of the oral Torah, everything was oral transmission. So that you wanted to make sure that when you transmitted a tradition, that you gave it exactly what the Rebbe had said. So maybe this is, in general, this is what they're referring to. They say, for example, that Rabbi Eliezer, who was a great Talmud Chacham, and he would never say something that he had not learned from his teachers, with all his greatness. On the other hand, we have to say that that would stifle to a certain extent also originality, you see. And they do feel, I know in other places, you know, they stress the importance of being Mechadish something, you know, that you should have something new in, you know, in your understanding of learning and contribution and so on and so forth. So that's why I say this is a little bit difficult to understand, you know, exactly in what sense they mean. Ha'omer dover shalei shamam pi rabo. Yeah.
Could it be that they wish to inhibit the possibility of someone offering his own opinion and passing it off as the opinion of his rabbi?
Yeah, that definitely they should not do. They could say that this is my own opinion. But to say that my Rebbe thought this when the Rebbe never said that, you know, that would be wrong. Yes.
I think it would follow his idea. The context just before it was saying you don't open another yeshiva.
Yeah.
So Irv's idea of saying don't quote another rabbi would follow along with the idea of don't open another yeshiva.
And also follows with the rule that it says that you should follow one Rebbe and not get opinions from two or three different Rebbes.
And further
on let's say a Shiloh.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I mean, when it came to discussions, I mean, nevertheless, it was possible at times to change. At other times it didn't. I mean, some were very consistent, even though they were a minority, but they stuck to the minority practice because this is what they had learned from the Rebbe. We have a case where he himself did this, but he told his son not to. He told his son that the son must follow the Chachamim. Why? Because I heard this directly from my Rebbe. You didn't hear it from my Rebbe. And so therefore you do what the Chachamim say. Yeah.
So I'm sort of corroborating what David said.
Yeah.
Trying to buttress that.
Yeah.
The also, the rule before the yeshiva, which is not to stand near the Rebbe, and in a sense try to catch some of the reflected glory upon yourself.
Maybe right. So buddy.
Same thing with the yeshiva, same thing with the opinion.
Yeah. Well, as I say, there are different ways that we can understand this, and the fact of the matter is that Rashi doesn't really comment on some of these things at all. So we have to use our imagination and try to read into the text, you know, what are they trying to actually get at. So that's why I gave you different ideas, okay? All right. So at any rate, what happens if you violate any of these things? It says, Shalom Pirav, it says, Gorem l'shchino shetistalik m'Yisrael. He causes the Shechina to remove itself from Israel. In other words, the Shechina itself is offended by the actions of such a Talmud. Okay? So, in justification of Rabbi Yirmiyah, they say, Shani Rabbi Yirmiyah. He's different than just an ordinary Talmud. Why? Because the Talmud Chover Hava. Because he was a Talmud Chover. Now again, the question is, what do we mean by a Talmud Chover? Okay? So, one interpretation of Talmud Chover is the fact that he was not only a Talmud, but he was considered like the colleague of. In other words, he was given so much respect that he was considered like the colleague of him. To me, that seems to be the best interpretation. There are other interpretations, however, about this, I have to tell you, okay? But let's stick to one for the time being.
He was a colleague of who?
He was a colleague of Rav. Remember, it said
Rav.
that he davened right behind him.
And Rav.
Okay? So how did he have the chutzpah to do it, you know, right behind him, so close to him? It didn't seem to be chutzpah, but the answer is he was not showing chutzpah. He was a very close colleague of him, and therefore, under those circumstances, it was proper for him to do it rather than being improper. So that's the explanation that I prefer over here. Behind the Ka'omale Rabbi Yirmiyah Be'Abba Rav, and this explains then what Rabbi Yirmiyah Be'Abba said to Rav. He says, Mi Badalt. He says, tell me, you daven Erev Shabbos early, right? So, Mi Badalt. Did you separate yourself? The answer is from what? The answer
from
is
Mincha.
No. You separate yourself from any work. In
oh.
other words, as a result of this, do you thereby refrain from doing any further work? You know, any further vachadika work? You know, the fact that you davened early?
Of course you have
Erev
to.
Shabbos. So Amalei, so he said to him, In Bedilna, yes, I did separate myself. In other words, that's exactly what I did. Okay, the lo Omar, and he did not say to him mi bodil mar. In other words, he did not say to him, "My master, did you separate yourself?" Right? Or mi bodil. You understand? Mi bodil mar. In other words, that when he asked the question, he did not do it with the respectful tone that we would expect. But rather, he spoke to him as fellow rabbi, fellow colleague. So this would seem to prove that the last interpretation is probably the more correct one, that Talmud Chover means that he's not only a Talmud, but he's also actually a colleague of his as well. So now the Gemara says, well, we'll stop in a few minutes, all right. Well, me bodil, but did Rav really refrain from doing any malacha after the time that he had davened? The Omar Rabbi Ovin, didn't Rabbi Ovin say, Pam Achas, it so happened that once, his Palil Rebbe Shel Shabbos Berev Shabbos, Rebbe, that's Rabbi Yudanossi, davened, you know, Erev Shabbos, the Nichnas Lemerchatz, and then what did he do? He went into the Merchatz, he went into the bathhouse. The Yotza, and then he went out of the bathhouse, Vishon Alon Pirkin, and then he taught us Gemara. Okay?
This is after
yeah.
Dabin.
Ba'adayin le Chashecha, and it was still before dark. So naturally, they're asking the question, how could he, if we say that he davened early, right? And then he went and did such a vachadika thing as going into the bathhouse. Because we know, are we permitted to bathe on Shabbos? The answer is no, not allowed to bathe the entire body on Shabbos, okay? Alright, so Amar Rava, so Rava said, Hahu de Nichlatz Haziyah the Kerem Gezera Ha. Okay? We'll stop at this. He said, well, this incident that you're telling me about, first of all, he didn't go in order to bathe, but he only went in because he wanted to sweat a little bit. He liked a good schwitz. So he went in to have a good schmitz. He figured that it's good for his health, and you know. And then afterwards, he came back. He felt invigorated, and he was able, you know, to give a good shear. You see, so not only that, but it's the Kodim Gezerah Habat. This also happened before the Chachamim finally came and they made a decree saying you're not allowed to go into the Beis Hamikdash even to sweat. Okay, so we'll stop at this particular point.
Let me ask
one
question.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a minhag also, I believe, that have some sort of separation between mincha and maariv, even if you daven maariv early, let's say, on Kabbalah Shabbos.
Okay. You're not required to, but this would be along the lines. Right, yeah.
Some kind of a separation. Wait 5 minutes or something like that.
Have a Devar Torah, something in between. Yeah, right. So you have all kinds of different customs. Our custom of davening immediately one after the other is, you know, it's based upon the fact that, look, we have to have consideration for the Olam. People get impatient, they want to get home and things like that and so on. Okay. But if you could possibly have a break in between and learn a little bit Torah or something, and certainly it's even more meritorious.
I didn't ask that question.
No question about that.
Let me ask a different question. There are people who work at night and people who work during the day. This assumes that all these time limitations assumes that people work a normal day.
Correct. We're talking about the average person.
Average person.
Right. We're not talking about the exceptional person. Sure.
So the people who have to work, let's say, like nurses and people who do things at night, bakers and people like that, who have to get up in the middle of the night to bake bread and so on, they must have some special dispensations.
Well, they would try to take some time out to daven at the right time.
They'd have to arrange their day accordingly.
Yeah, right. They'd have to arrange the schedule to try to daven at some point or other in their routine at the right time.
Even though they may have to sleep and so forth.
I mean, I can't say, for example, daven chakras at Meyer time or something like that.
Obviously, no. Put on filling and so forth.
Right. So you just have to adjust it and take advantage of whatever leniencies you can. But if you can, you know, let's say, for example, you work all night, come home or get to an early shul, daven with a minion or whatever it may be, and then go to bed.
But then you have to get up. You have to get up to daven mincha before
the time is out.
Time is out.
All right. No. If you don't sleep all day long, at least let's say if you get into bed at 7-8 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, so you get up about 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
You know, like the reason I ask that because I remember when my brother was with the post office, he would work the night shift,
right.
And it was like 7 to 7, you know.
Right. And there are plenty of people today, you know, who do work night shifts, no question. But under the circumstances, you try to do the very best that you can.
Yeah, to try to keep the schedule.
Right.
So next week?
Yeah, next week we'll be in business at the same time.
Oh, okay.
7:30, yes.
Club Zion.
Okay.
Okay. Just to review for a minute or two, what were we discussing, you know, towards the end of last week's discussion, okay? At the bottom of the previous page, basic discussion right now. First, then, okay, how did we get to it? Okay, we got to it, number one, by establishing the fact that as far as mincha is concerned, remember that Rabbi Yehuda had his policy was that mincha time ends at the end of the first plag mincha, which, as we established, is an hour and a quarter prior to sunset, okay? Therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what happens at that particular point? At that particular point, according to him, mincha time ends, which means that automatically Maariv time begins, okay? So under those circumstances, we can see then that people following his particular, shit, in other words, his particular system, his particular policy, if you wish, okay? With them, there's justification for davening Maariv earlier than sunset. If, on the other hand, you follow the opinion of the Chachamim, Chachamim said that mincha time extends until sunset, Ad Va'erev, right? And therefore, Maariv itself doesn't begin until after it's the evening. Okay. And then we came to a conclusion based on the discussion that we had that it's the Ovid Kamar Ovid and the Ovid Kamar Ovid. In other words, if you stick to the policy of Rabbi Yehuda, fine. If you stick to the policy of the Chachamim, fine. But of course, what is the implication? The implication is, you know, that we should be consistent in what we are doing. We shouldn't go jumping around and decide one day we'll do according to Rabbi Huda's opinion, the next day we'll go according to the Chachamim's opinion. Okay? So this was the conclusion that we reached at that particular point. Then the next thing that they brought in is the fact that Rav davened the Marav of Shabbos while it was still early. Bear of Shabbos, okay? So, this, as I say, is a logical consequence. It would seem to indicate then that, you know, he followed the system that Rabbi Yehuda had proposed, right? But what they are now bringing in right now is the following fact. At least, I mean, it's not stated so specifically in the Gemara, but it is inferred in the Gemara. What is inferred? What is inferred is the fact that it is possible, let's say, to believe that it's to follow the system of the Chachomim, even Erev Shabbos. But if a person who does so normally and wants to Erev Shabbos follow the example of Rav and follow the system of Rav Yehuda, in other words, to be Mekabel Shabbos early, by davening the Shemoneh Esrei, you know, before, while it's still daylight, even though it's not nidus yet, so he may do so. Okay? So this is one of the things that we gather. Of course, we had several other things that we learned incidentally. As for example, it's not right to interrupt people who are standing Shemoneh Esrei, so don't pass by either in front of them or to the side of them, whatever, you know. In other words, don't disturb them while they're still standing Shemoneh Esrei. That's one thing. It says, however, that if you're already four amos away, then in that case you can, because it's no longer, you know, that it's no longer this their particular rishus, so to speak. In other words, it's no longer their particular area, and you wouldn't be disturbing them if you're already four amos away from them. But otherwise, you shouldn't do it. Okay.
What is amos?
An amma is in English, the translation is cubit, which means roughly a foot and a half in length. Okay? So that four amos would be 6 feet, approximately. Yeah.
But do we take, therefore, from what you said, that you can actually mix the shita you said of Rabbi Yehuda, as well as
certainly as far as Erev Shabbos is concerned.
Only as far as Erev Shabbos is concerned.
I don't want to say only, but I say certainly as far as Erev Shabbos is concerned. Okay? Because also, you know, we have a principle of what we call Tosefes Shabbos. Tosefes Shabbos means that you add to the Kedusha of Shabbos by extending it to the weekday, which would mean, first of all, being Mekabel Shabbos a little bit earlier, even though it's not yet sunset, right? So we know, I mean, when do we bench lift Erev Shabbos?
No, before sunset.
No, we don't.
Huh?
No.
Quite
that's a real machber.
18
minutes we do before. Others say 20 minutes, but we.
Now why do
follow
we say
the
Dav Meir about an hour after lift pension then on Motzei Shabbos?
Motzei Shabbos. Okay, so let me explain
that's
why.
Different.
Okay, we're talking Motzei Shabbos. As I said, the Tosefa Shabbos is not only at the beginning of Shabbos that we add to the week, that we take from the weekday and add to the Shabbos. We're adding from Erev Shabbos to Shabbos, right? By making additional time, by benching lift earlier, and by, if we wish, davening earlier too, if we want to, okay? But the same thing is true that Motzei Shabbos, we also are Moisif Min HaKol El HaKodesh by taking time from Saturday night and adding it to Shabbos. In other words, by extending the Shabbos later than we would, let's say, theoretically have to. Now, of course, you can see, if we say that the line of demarcation is sunset, then in that particular case, it would mean that right after sunset, Motzei Shabbos, you should be permitted to daven the Mar- you know the Marav Mitzvah Shabbos and make yourself Vachadik, right? But that's not what we believe. What we believe is that you have to be Moisif, you have to add from the weekday to Shabbos, okay? In other words, extend the Shabbos until you're sure that, according to everybody's opinion, it's already dark. Then what is everybody's opinion? There we learned there is a difference of opinion as to when night actually begins. It may not be simply at the moment of Shekiah, in other words, when the sun sets, because as we're all aware, in most of our country, remember we had a whole discussion about this, about twilight and so on. Remember we discussed that last week. Okay. In most countries, there is a period of twilight that can extend 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour, whatever it may be. As a matter of fact, over here, you can say that twilight is almost about a half hour in length. If you take a look, I mean, between the time that the sun sets and it's really good and dark outside, it's practically a half hour.
How about Norway or Denmark? Is it
yeah, well, this is what we spoke about the other week.
There is an accepted definition of what sunset is. You look in the newspaper and they say sunset is 7:57.
Good, good,
or 9:32, or, you know, something like that.
Very good. I don't doubt that there's an accepted definition.
I mean, that's a scientific definition.
Yeah, fine. As I told you, when I was in France in the summertime, so the sun set officially at about 8:15. Shabbos for me did not end until almost 11 o'clock at night, simply because of the fact that you could walk in the street and there was still light out. I don't care. The fact that the sun was below the horizon, but still there was light all that time. I went to Paris, I found the same story over there also, that until Shabbos was over, it was close to 11 o'clock at night.
And in Scotland, yeah, it's the same way? It goes
Because any of the areas of Northern Europe, or if we would go to the northern part of Canada or Alaska or something like that, we would find a similar situation, absolutely.
Well, case of Scotland, there's a very rational explanation, though.
Case of what?
The case of Scotland, there's a very rational
I thought you were talking about a case of scotch. I don't know.
No, not in the case of Scotland. In the case of Scotland, there's a very rational explanation. That the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Oh!
Start off the day before.
Well, I think that the British themselves unfortunately put the sunset on their own empire. This was true back in the days of Queen Victoria and the days of King George V, but things certainly happened after the war when part after part of the British Empire simply was lost to Britain. Right? Best that they could have is what they call the Commonwealth. But how much power the British Commonwealth has, that's already a different question, too. All right.
So, officially, you cannot daven Ma'ariv or Motzei Shabbos until...
You shouldn't. This is something that we'll see discussed in a few moments. Okay. But I just want to call your attention. I mean, you said to me, well, this is an officially accepted idea that it's a scientific fact that there is sunset. Okay, I'm not arguing the point, but if you remember way, way back in the first couple of pages that we had in Gemara Brachos, they were talking over there about the fact about Seis HaKoychavim. In other words, right, when the stars come out, and they don't mean, let's say, one isolated star up in the sky, but they mean
three stars,
when you can see three medium stars, okay?
If I remember the message, if you're driving, Lord, you don't have to have your headlights on until an hour after sunset.
No, a half hour is required, absolutely. But frankly, if you can't see well... Yeah, I understand. It's the same thing in the morning, you know, prior to sunrise. If it's light enough, I mean, you don't need it, but of course, for your own protection, you're probably better off to keep your lights on.
The Commonwealth of Massachusetts recognizes that it's not...
Correct. That there is, as I say, a half hour difference between the time either the sunrise and sunset and, you know, what... precedes it or follows. Okay.
All right.
So then, of course, we learn that, okay, that Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba said to Rav, this is approximately about 6-7 lines down, he said to him, Ibadalta, which means, tell me, did you cease? literally, did you separate yourself or did you cease from doing melacha? This is the idea, right? Okay, you davened early, but does it mean that you didn't do anything vachadik after the time that you davened? This is the question, all right? Now, they brought it in originally, if you remember, to prove the fact that Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba was a Talmid Chover. I mean, that when he addressed Rav, he didn't address him simply, he didn't address him with the terms of respect that we should use in speaking to a rabbi. You should say, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi, or he should have said to him, Mibadil Mar, but instead he said, Mibadalta. You know that in certain languages there is a difference between using second person and third person forms, even though the implication is you.
Second person singular plural?
Well, okay. For example, in French we know that tu, you know, is used for somebody, you're familiar with, a member of your family or a close friend or a buddy or a contemporary or something like that.
So you'd say
a colleague. Right.
You're getting at His Excellency.
Yeah, right.
Would Her Majesty like that?
Correct, exactly. But you have these third person. Now, for example, in Spanish, if you ever studied, you will know that in Spanish you have, again, for example, if I want to say you, in the singular, you have the word tu, which is like the French word tu, right? And then you have the word usted. And not only do you have two different words for you in Spanish, but what grammatical forms do we use? Well, with tu, you have to use the form that goes with tu. In other words, the form that usually ends in the letter S, let's say, in the present tense or something like that, okay? And that's considered the intimate form. Usted, which is the polite way of saying you, takes instead in Spanish a third person form always. Of course, there's a historical reason for it. The word usted originally was vuestra merced, which means your mercy, your grace. Talking very politely to somebody, I said, does your grace desire this? Does your grace desire that? But notice I don't say, do you? I say, does your grace do it, you see? So, the same thing. If he had talked politely to Rav, he would have said, mi bodil mar, right? Which is a third person form. But instead he said to him, right? Mi bodil no, tell me, mi bedalt, which is a second person form, mi bedalt. Right? So Amalei in bedilin, he said to him, yes, I did so. Belo amar mi bodil mar, right? But now the question that they asked is, I'll continue from here now in order, okay? Umi Bodil, but tell me, did Rav really stop doing Bochadika things because of, by virtue of the fact that he had davened Erev Shabbos, earlier than the Shki, let's say, earlier than sunset? Well, Omar Rabbi Oven, didn't Rabbi Oven say, Pam achas ispalil Rabbi shel Shabbos be'erev Shabbos? Once so happened that Rebbe, in this case it doesn't mean necessarily Rav, but it means Rabbi Yehuda Anossi. Rabbi Yehuda Anossi. usually when they speak about Rebbe, so this Rabbi is what they mean, right? So Rav Ovin said that Pam Achas his fellow Rebbe shall Shabbos bere Shabbos. He said that once upon a time Rebbe davened the Shabbos Dikta Shemini Esra, Erev Shabbos, v'nichnas l'merchatz, and right after that, what did he do? He went into the bathhouse, the Yotzah, and then he left the bathhouse, v'shodolon pirkon, and he taught us our lesson in Gabar, okay? V'adayin loichashecha, and it still was not yet dark at that particular point. So how could Rebbe HaKadosh do what? Go into a bathhouse, when we know that Mentalnished, after Shabbos, you're not supposed to, it's a Vachadika thing. So Rava explained, he said, Ahud Nichlas Hazir. He says, when Rabbi went in to the bathhouse, number one, he went in only to Schwitz. Didn't go in, in order to take a bath or a shower or anything like that, which certainly, was prohibited, but he went in order just to sweat a little bit.
Like
warm himself up, whatever it may be, okay, right. Not only that, he says, but the Kodem Gezerah Haba. But this event also happened before our Chachomim came along in the Gemara Shabbos, where the incident is mentioned, and they made a rule stating that you're not allowed to go into the merchatz either to bathe or to sweat once at a Shabbos.
Is a bath? Is that the word for bath?
Oh yeah, merchatz, right. Oh yeah, yeah. Beit ha-merchatz, right. Or in this case, they simply leave out the word beit. Everybody knows what they mean by merchatz. Yeah. So that thing in Mama Lashon too, in Europe, they used to speak about Oslo. The gate Merchatz of Shabbos. In other words, this is where you go to the Merchatz. So they use the expression from the Gemara over here. Because I don't have to tell you, in Europe.
Yeah, right.
They didn't have plumbing. Showers in the house and things like that, but they wanted to cleanse themselves every Shabbos, which is an old custom going back centuries and centuries and centuries. And so therefore they went into the bathhouse. They had our board, you know. And that's where they went.
And then they would go to the mikveh.
Yeah, if they were Hasidim, they went to the mikveh. The Ashkenazim didn't with the same frequency. Although in Eretz Yisrael it's become stylish already too. A lot of things have happened, you know. The differences between the Ashkenazim and I don't mean Ashkenazim. What I really mean is, you know, between what we call misnagdim and chassidim, okay, right. About certain practices. For example, if you would take a look at pictures of the yeshivas in Europe prior to the Second World War, you would find that the men, you know, the talmidei chachamim who were studying over there in the yeshivas were all shaven.
They didn't have beards.
They didn't have beards, no. Maybe when they got married they would begin to wear a beard, maybe, but certainly before marriage they certainly never wore beards in those days. Instead they shaved. Not only that, but if you try to find tzitzis outside of their jackets, you'll discover that no, the tzitzis were wear underneath their shirts. This is where they wore them. Okay, now this was the custom of the Misnagdim. Chassidim on the other hand had the custom, of course, of wearing beards and having the tzitzis openly displayed. So what do we find today? Of course we find today that more and more, you know, people, they may be learning, let's say, in what we would call the Wolfischer yeshivas, which means, you know, the successors to the Lithuanian yeshivas of Europe. Like Panevėž and Mir and Radin and, you know, you name it, Telš, etc., okay, Lutsk, and so whatever yeshivas, Hebron, you know. They learn in these places, but what are they doing? The young men are wearing beards now, and the tzitzis are outside. So I take a look at my Einiklach. My Einiklach are going around, you know, with tzitzis hanging out. I and my sons were not used to that, because we are still members of a generation where we wore our tzitzis underneath our shirts. Okay. That's it. That's my Einiklach today beginning to grow longer payers than they ever did, so on. Again, what is the point that I'm making? The point that I'm making is that it's become a new sign of frumkeit to seem to do these things. And even though the tradition of your family may be misnagdish, but nevertheless,
you're wrong, you do it
today, right? When you see that to be a real frumi, you're expected to do this and this, so you want to show that you're a real frumi by wearing your tzitzis out, by getting payas and things like that.
He did away with the tzitzit test, huh?
Right. Yeah.
He used to slap you on the back to check and see if you had a tzitzis.
Yeah, I still remember Rabbi Sabbath Solomon Sholem.
He used to do that
one day had a tzitzis check.
Check, yeah. We went to the same chayyot thing.
This is back in the Bronx.
Yeah, he slap you on the back, you know. How are you, kid? How are you today? You know, you feel your tzitzis.
So you can tell. You didn't tell us the
Oh, sure, you had to wear it.
You know, they tell about Rabbi.
He got beat up.
They tell about Rabbi Revel, Oliver Sholem, the man who founded Yeshiva University. Okay, that occasionally he'd meet boys and he'd say, tell me. And how is your Yirah Shemayim today?
Yeah.
I don't know if they would ask us how we would be able to answer that.
Fear of heaven, huh?
Yeah, right. Okay, so getting back to our text over here.
Okay, so explanation that even though Rebbe went into the bathhouse, number one, he didn't take a shower over there, but he only went in to sweat, because he felt, you know, that a dry heat, this was permissible, and also the decree had not yet been made prohibiting going into the bathhouse, period.
But he'd have to wipe himself and so on to come out of the bathhouse, so that would be forbidden.
Well, so he didn't use a towel.
he ran through the air.
Okay.
Go outside and let the air dry.
All right. So far, what have we established? We've established the fact that, okay, that if you daven early, the fact that Rebbe went into the bathhouse is no indication of the fact that you're permitted to do vochadika things even after you have davened Erev Shabbos, the Shabbos dika daven, right? So now they challenge it with another example. They say, V'ho Abaye, surely the Rav Dimi bar Levi, says, Abaye gave permission to Rav Dimi, the son of Levi, L'chavruye saleh, to smoke baskets. Apparently, in the manufacturing of baskets, one of the processes was to use some pitch, you know, and set it on fire or something like that, and then to use the smoke of it in order to, I don't know whether it helped to cure the wood or something like that, okay? So, to preserve it better. So, when did he give him permission to do it? Obviously, he gave him permission to do it Erev Shabbos, even though, what is the implication? That they had already
davened.
Okay, so how do you explain that? So they say, Tawusa Havai. So they say, no, that was a mistake. V'tawusa mihadra. So now they ask the question, all right, and if you make a mistake, so do you have to repeat the Shmon Esrei? This is the question now. Do you have to repeat it again? Usually when they say Toas Choser or something like that, or Toas Choseres, it means that if you make a mistake, you have to do it over again, okay? So now the question is, okay, he gave him permission, it was mistaken. Why were they mistaken? They probably thought it was only Finster outside, but it wasn't dark, you see. It was not yet. So when he gave him permission, it was based on mistaken information.
He gave permission to do what?
To smoke these baskets, even though it was already, it already davened beforehand.
Okay.
After all, how, if he had already davened, how can you do that? So he says it was a mistake.
Okay.
According to Rashi, the mistake was that he had not yet realized that the Shabbos, he says, because it was Yom Ha'unah, it happened to be a cloudy day, and you know, they had no way of knowing at the time. They thought that if it's cloudy, it means it's Shem Shabbos, right? So afterwards, what happened? The sun came out again in full glory, and they saw that it was still early. So the question is, having davened and done so by mistake, can he do any work? So if we're of the opinion, you know, that he gave him permission to do this work because he had not really accepted upon himself Shabbos, you understand? So the question is then, in that case, do you daven over again? Since for you it wasn't Shabbos, so even though you daven, do you daven over again? This is what the question is over here. All right, I don't have to tell you that from the point of view of halacha, you know, once you daven Erev Shabbos, even if it's by mistake, you should make yourself Shabbos day. No question. But we're talking about here is an event that took place, and in those days they were not quite certain yet, you know, what to do. So he asked them, you know, obviously, you know, had you known, for example? I mean, we have to assume, you see, what's going on. He probably said to him, would you have davened so early had you known that it was still early? I mean, don't forget, they didn't use a clock, maybe, or something like that in order to determine, you know, what time it was. They went simply on the basis of the fact, oh, the day is getting dark. So, had you known when you davened, you know, that it was still early, that you didn't have to daven yet? So if he answered him, obviously, no, I would not have been mekabel Shabbos as yet. And in that the case, so he said, all right, then you continue working until it's actually dark. But how about davening then? Should he daven over again? So the question remains up in the air. V'ho amar Avidon. So So they bring another case. This is the case where Aviron said, "Ham achas once." Yes.
I don't follow this.
Yeah.
Why, even if it was cloudy, even if it was dark, once they decided that it was time to
be the Kabbal Shabbos, yeah.
The Kabbal Shabbos, how could he then give, you know, how could he permit him to do what
work.
Clearly Avmalah?
Well, this is why I say I'm trying to reconstruct in my own mind what kind of a conversation took place. Obviously, he came to him with the Shaila, right?
Right.
He said, "Can I go back again to doing my work that I was doing Erev Shabbos?" So he said to him, okay.
This must have been after they discovered their mistake.
Yeah, right, of course. That's what I'm talking about. Right. You know, as I said.
They gave him permission to do the work after he discovered his mistake.
Right. Yeah, right, because the sun came out again. They saw that it was still early, that there wasn't yet time, necessarily to be Kabbal Shabbos. That's
another way. The guy, one guy could independently have davened, and then he walked along the street. And then the rabbi who gave permission didn't know the other guy had davened and said, "Why don't you go put those baskets over the fire? You've still got time."
Rule it out, but it seems to me that more likely he did ask a shayla.
Well, it doesn't follow, but if you daven early,
and
before the before the time to daven, and you make yourself Shabbosik, if the other person doesn't daven at that same time, he can continue to work until the time it is time to daven.
Yeah, that already is a different problem. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't follow that
but
somebody
else doesn't. But the question
is
about a community, you see.
Yeah.
This is already a different problem, too. What happens in the case of the community? The entire community decides that we're going to be Mekabel Shabbos early. Then, in that particular case, people should not make their own laws, you see. But, where you have some people doing it and other people are not doing it yet, so in that case, you can allow yourself the Ovid Kamar. About Erev Shabbos that you mekabel, but not on Thursday. You don't do mekabel.
I've had strange dreams. I mean,
I know.
You know, I've had strange dreams.
But
I mean, if you just woke up from a dream and you dreamt, I got to light the candle. You know,
it happens. I mean, you get crazy dreams. There's no question. Of course, we all have experienced dreams in which they seem they're so real to us, and then when we wake up, we discover, hey.
Suppose you wake up and you quickly light the candle.
They're not real.
And it's in fact Friday morning instead of Friday evening.
Right. Okay. You have to work on the basis of reasonableness too. Okay. Obviously, Thursday would be out. Okay.
Right.
If you tell me Friday afternoon, that's already a different
story. You woke up from this strange dream Friday morning.
Yeah.
You look up. You thought you were taking a nap. You dreamt it was Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
You look up. The sky is kind of dark. Say, I've got to quickly light the candle.
Yeah.
And you light the candles, and then you discover it.
Well,
I suggest you look at your
watch. This is why you have to ask a shayla and so on.
How
could
you do
that?
Because you would be davening Mahari before you take to Shafi.
First of all, you should be sleeping that night. If we're talking about Friday afternoon, but it doesn't make sense. I mean, to talk anytime prior.
Things are going to have all kinds of ridiculous
situations. Right. But we have to bear in mind that obviously he must have asked the shayla, and he was given the answer. Okay, you're permitted to do it because you were under the mistaken impression that it was. But it still wasn't there of Shabbos, and therefore.
But they don't tell you whether he has to repeat the davening.
Okay, the answer, of course, would be they don't answer the question at this particular point.
The answer would be that you would have.
The answer would be that you would, right? But against the Hakir Shuriti, this would really be the answer. Okay.
No, just like you have to say the Shema.
So
that.
So there's another question, all right? For Omar Avidon Pamachas, this Kashru Shemayim, the other one says, once it happened that the sky was covered with thick clouds, people took a look and they said, it's already dark outside. And they came into the shul. This happened on a Shabbos. And what did they do? They davened the Shemin Esra, you know, the tefillah is for Motzei Shabbos, while it was still Shabbos, actually.
Wow.
And then what happened? Then it's Pazru Heovim, and then the clouds dissipated, they scattered literally. The Zorcha Chama, and lo and behold, the sun shone. So, Bo, Visholes Rebbe. And they came and they asked the Shalev Rebbe, what should we do, Rebbe? So the Omar, so he said to them, Ho will be his palalu. He says, all right, you've already davened, you've davened. But the answer they give is, Shani Tzibur, the lo matchidin le. He says, Tzibur is different. In other words, an entire community or a whole congregation, you don't ask them to daven all over again. But what is the implication? The implication is that the Yochid
should daven over.
Should. All right. Now, of course, we have to ask the question, why shouldn't we ask, you know, if it's a community that davened already? Well, okay, the answer is because we have two reasons. Number one, in general, we try not to place burdens upon a tzibur. Try not to. Of course, sometimes they have chazanim who do try to. But theoretically, we're not supposed to try to place burdens upon the tzibur. Okay, that's number one. But number two, we have to bear in mind that if we follow, for example, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that an hour and a quarter prior to sunset is already the end of the mincha time and the beginning of the ma'ariv time, then logically it could follow what? That if they daven, let's say, in this particular period, even though it's still with Shabbos, but the tefillah itself would be yotzei because the rest of the time they're also, you know, following the system of Rabbi Yehuda, namely that an hour and a quarter prior to sunset is already ma'ariv time, you see. So that's why. But as we say, the implication, of course, again, is that in the case of the individual who davened, he would have to daven over again. But if it were a whole tzibur, we're not going to place an additional burden on the tzibur. All right, but of course, what does that show? It shows us that the possibility arises also, you know, that davening Motzei Shabbos, davening earlier than the correct zman. So naturally now this brings us to, so let's discern, you know, let's make a determination right now, what should we do? So I'm a Rav Chiya Bar Avin. So Rav Chiya Bar Avin said, Rav Tzoli Shal Shabbos Be'er Shabbos, right? Rav Davin, the Shabbos Dikah Ma'ariv, when? Erev Shabbos. Rav Yoshiya, he Matzah Shal Motzei Shabbos B'Shabbos, and he Davin, the Motzei Shabbos Dikah Davin, on Shabbos itself. It was still Shabbos at the time when he did. All right. So, Rav Tzoli Shal Shabbos Be'er Shabbos. Okay, when Rav Davin, the Shabbos Dikah Davin, Erev Shabbos, Omer Kedush Al Hakol, so I know Omer Kedush Al Hakol. So tell me, they said, did he then go home immediately and make Kiddush over the cup of wine, or he didn't? In other words, the question is this. Okay, granted that he davened early, but does it mean, therefore, that he could also then go ahead and do everything else that you expect him to do on Shabbos, like, for example, making Kiddush, eating in Shabbos the Kabil, and things like that, and so on? Or would he still have to wait until it's dark, until Tzeis HaKoychavim, before he could do all the other things? Just the filler would be Yotzei, but all the other things he has to wait until later to do. This is the question, okay? Toshma. So they say, come and listen. Tell you a ma'isa for which we can learn. The Omer Rav Nachman of Shmuel, Nachman said in the name of Shmuel, he said, Mispalel Odom Shel Shabbos Be'erev Shabbos. He says that a person can daven the Shabbos Dikah daven in Erev Shabbos, V'yom Kedush Al HaKos, and he says, Kedush on the cup of wine, in other words, makes Kedush on the cup of wine, the Hilchis or Kavosei, and the Halacha Taka follows this. So that therefore, what can we do if we daven early Erev Shabbos? We don't wait for sunset, but you know, we daven early in that. We're mekabel upon ourselves to observe everything which is Shabbos, and therefore we can make Kiddush on the cup, we can sit down, have a Shabbos like a meal, etc., etc., which of course is what we do, you know, whenever we daven earlier, as for example, during summertime or something like that, when we do that. And this is a halacha. those who want to wait until it's good dark and wait until 9 o'clock at night before davening, all right, it's their privilege to do so, but it doesn't mean that they have to force other people to do what the Gemara itself legitimizes as being perfectly acceptable.
But there are people who don't do that.
Yeah, of course there are. I know. I mean, if you would come to Kessel on a Friday night and see how the Lubavitcher are acting over there, it's a little strange, I have to tell you. They come down, I think Bob will corroborate me or contradict me, either one. But, you know, they come to Davin. They're there in shul physically, okay? But the congregation is davening Kabbalah Shabbos, is davening Maariv. They're standing around talking to each other, or maybe they're looking, if they don't want to talk, they'll look into a chumash or something like that, so on. But they're not davening with the Eilim.
When do they daven?
That's a good question. Either they daven when they get home, or maybe they grab it in while we're busy with Olenu or something like that. Maybe they do the whole davening at that time.
But why do they come to Minyan?
All right. Listen, they want to get the Skar Halicha, you know. They want to get.
But if they don't consider it, they're not Zecha.
They want to hear Baruch Hu with a minion.
Yeah,
they
okay.
Well, if they don't pronounce Baruch Hu, they don't accept it.
No, Baruch Hu they say, but they say Baruch Hu. They're responding to it.
They're
responding
to
a Kaddish, okay? A Kedusha, Mincha, but there's no Kedusha in Maariv.
That's right.
Okay. But I'm talking about what are the Mincha? They were davening with the Eilim, but the question is about the Maariv. I mean, he was saying Lufu Naranador and everything else, and so they zitz them over there. I mean, as I say, either they look around into something or else they're busy walking around talking to each other. It's one of the
other. They use the same sitter.
Huh?
They use the same sitter.
Yeah, right. And the Kessel was davening primarily out of the Lubavitcher sitter these days. It wasn't always so, but we do.
They use a different sitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
They use a different set of
Shabbos.
They don't use the.
Okay. You have to realize that there's a history behind everything, okay? Current Kesser is not the original Kesser. There are a handful of people who are still there back in the downtown Kesser, okay? Others have come in who have come from a Nusach Sfard background. Now, the Nusach in Kesser is Nusach Ari, which.
Was it always a Nusach?
Huh?
It was always Nusach Ari.
As far as I know, it was. Whereas we used to have a shul called the Rishus Shul downtown, where they daven Nusach Sfard. Okay. Now, some are right. When they built Kesser over here, they were really doing it according to the Nusach Sfard Sfida. Because very few of the original Kesserites were over there. On the contrary, you know, they had gained some adherence from the Rishus Shul, which had disbanded and so on, they came in.
And there was another Kesser on Chestnut Street.
Yeah, you're right, that was the original Kesser. Correct.
Original,
yeah, that was the original Kesser. Yeah. But as I say, the other one was on Dwight Street, the Rishus Shul. Okay? Then the history was that, okay, so you had first of all a mixed group to begin with, okay? Who was the rabbi at first? The answer was Reb Moshe Don Shenkov, all of a sudden, okay? He was the rabbi when, you know, he lost out in B'nai Jacob because of the whole machlokes that took place over there. So this is the shul in which he found refuge, okay?
So what did he follow?
Okay, huh? He, okay, no. First of all, he had grown up, you know, with a Litvish tradition. So originally in the big shul when he was in Beth Israel, the Davin to Nusach Ashkenaz over there.
Ashkenaz,
okay?
Well,
yeah. All right.
Another element.
When he came to Kesser, so they Davin Svarish, Nusach Svart, okay? And the siddur that they have in those days that they adopted was the Birnbaum siddur, which is a Nusach Sfard. Right. It's not a Nusach Ari, but it's a Nusach Sfard. Okay.
When is this Birnbaum Sephardic?
Yeah,
just as we have a Birnbaum Ash, you know, a Nusach Ashkenaz, so there's also a Birnbaum Nusach Sfard. Mm-hmm.
Ah, so that's not really a Sephardic, that's a Nusach Sfard. That's,
yeah, I don't mean Sephardi, you know, in the sense of the Spanish Portuguese. No, I don't mean that at all.
No.
What we call Nusach Sfard is not Sfarad.
It's really
Sfard.
Sorry, it's from the time of the Ari.
No,
this is,
To a certain extent, time of the Ari, more actually, it was more the Nusach that was adopted eventually by the Hasidim, by the Baal Shem Tov and his followers. They were the ones who adopted
okay.
that. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So that was the Nusach that they had. Yeah. So that's what we call Nusach Sfard. It's something in Eretz Israel today. Nusach Sfard has become very, very popular.
Mm-hmm.
For people who have an Ashkenazi tradition, they have an Ashkenaz. But for people who had no tradition when they came to Eretz Israel, they are using now the Nusach Sfard. Okay, that is their the new tradition. You know, in an attempt to try to unify a little bit what's going on there in Eretz Israel. All right. So when did they adopt the Nusach Ari Siddur in Kesser? The answer is they adopted it when Shmuley Edelman became the rabbi, and little by little they made all kinds of changes over there in order to make it conform more with the Lubavitch than Kesser had been to begin with.
I think they had that the Nusach Ari, they had that before they became the rabbi, because I remember buying one from Botnik and it was
Yeah, but they didn't. I mean, I'll give you a couple of illustrations to show, you know, how they changed it, okay? I mean, I'm not arguing the fact that Kesser, when it was downtown, you know, David Nusach Ari, I'm sure they did, okay? But what I'm saying is as follows, that when they made the shul on Oakland Street, they were davening really Nusach Sfard rather than Nusach Ari, okay? But when the Lubavitcher came in, then little by little they threw out some things. In other cases, that they may have adopted, you know, because it was too ingrained. Let me give you an illustration.
So far, Shmuley Edelman is responsible. Later, Stan Busk is responsible.
Well, Shmuley and his father, yeah. David Edelman, who used to daven at that time before he organized, you know, the Lubavitcher yeshiva. You know, before the yeshiva, so he used to daven also over there, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Our custom, and this custom is also the custom, for example, of the you know, Nusach Sfard, if you daven on a yontif, you start with Borku. Talking, of course, about a bachadika, okay, a bachadika yontif. You start with Borku. All of a sudden, you take a look. They paste it in into the siddur, an addendum. That you should say a shiramailis and things like you do in the vachadik adavning, that they added to the Shabbos to the yontif adavning as well. So that's one thing that they did.
That's certainly a Lubavitcher.
Yeah, that's a Lubavitch because Nusach Sfard didn't know. There's a question also, for example.
I'm sorry, excuse me. What did they? What agenda?
If you have to look at the siddur to realize, okay, in the Nusach Sfard, and particularly also Nusach Ari, you find that prior to Baruch Hu, you say a Shir Hamalos, you know, the last of the Shir Hamalos, you say, and Hashem Tzvei Tzimoni Mitzchalonu, Hashem Tzvei Tzimoni Mitzchalonu, Hashem Tzvei Tzimoni Mitzchalonu, you say it three times, and so on and so forth, okay? And then, there was a difference as to whether you say the Hurachim before this, or whether you say the Hurachim afterwards. This is one of the points of difference still between them. But the point is that in Nusach Sfar, this is only for a weekday davening that you have that. Shabbos and Yom Tov, they never say it. No. So lo and behold, you know, all of a sudden they're saying it now in the Sechavi. Okay. And, you know, in Kesser, which they never did before. And this is under the Babich influence. Okay?
When?
Yeah.
When?
Friday night. Yeah. We're talking about when a Yom Tov occurs on
the
weekday. Right. Okay. I can give you other illustrations. For example, Nusach Sfard, you say Vishomru Friday night. Before Shemone Esrei, just as the Ashkenazim do, Nusach Ari omits it. So every comes to Baruch Hu. Some say, some don't. You know, depends which Rebbe you're following over there. Okay.
Do they say the Chunar Aron? Like that?
That's another problem. Chunar Aron they say normally, but here is a difference of opinion again. In that, the Ashkenazim, for example, if you have a Yontif which occurs on a Friday night, okay. Or if it's during Cholamid, our custom is that we omit the whole Kavod Shabbos and we start right from Mizmor Shel Shabbos and Hashem Molo, and then we go on to Borough. That's what
Shabbos,
we do.
Yeah, right.
All right. Nusach Sfard, the custom developed that you say Mizmer Shem, you say first Mizmer LeDovid, Hor Shemanei Elim, you start from there, and you say the first couple of stanzas of the Chor Dodi and the last couple of stanzas of the Chor Dodi, and then after that, you know, usually they didn't say Kigavna if it was Friday night when it was Yom Tov. Usually they didn't.
What was this?
But some did. You don't know Kigavna? I haven't met Kigavna.
What is that?
Kigavna is a prayer which is said instead of Bavim Vadlikin, the Ashkenazic ritual, so they say Kigavna, which is a selection taken from the Zohar.
Oh, I've never had the pleasure of
it's
having to say that.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
It's fast.
Okay. So in this Achari, the custom is to say Lechunaranam and everything else. And so in Kesar, it's a sort of, they're not sure which custom to follow. Sometimes they do the whole thing, sometimes they do partly, and so on.
Let me
so
ask you,
yeah.
Salah, then.
Yeah.
Let's assume that you, you an Ashkenazi.
Yeah.
Or Mesnagin, whatever you want to call
yeah.
yourself, come into a shul like that, and they're davening Nusach Ari.
Yeah.
You as you're not davening for Yom, you're davening by yourself.
Right.
What
for yourself, you can daven
you
your own Nusach that you're familiar with. If you're davening for the Yom, then you have to daven Nusach.
Obviously.
For sure.
But I mean,
okay.
But if
yeah.
you're davening by but you're davening with the
okay.
So you're not davening
so
with
I'll tell
them,
you what
really.
I do. I'll tell you very honestly. I daven with Kesser when I go there Friday night. Okay. I still am davening Nusach Ashkenazi for myself, okay? Which means that those things that either they add or they subtract, you know, I do according to mine, all right? So that, for example, in the Chor Dodi, instead of saying, gam birino tzaholo, I say gam b'simcha tzaholo because it's what I'm used to saying all the time, okay? And I mentioned already, you know, that v'shomru, you know, I say, because this is my Nusach to say v'shomru. Even if others don't say it, okay?
But you use a an Ashkenazi
prayer
book.
I daven. I can daven from a Nusach Ari sitter and still daven Nusach Ashkenazi. I'm not going to get mixed up.
I don't think you would.
But certain things I'll do according to the shul that I'm in. As for example, instead of saying Bamim Adlikin, since it's not really an obligatory prayer, but it was added really so that we should have some learning going on for Friday night, okay?
Or give the latecomers a chance to come
right.
to shul.
Right, so
to
if the shul says, you know, if they say Kigavna, so I'll say Kigavna too. I mean, I'll make shalom with that. Or the fact that the Nusach Sfard, after, you know, the Chazans, you know, we say Vayechulu and Moginoves and so on and so forth, so they add Mizmor LeDovid, the 23rd Psalm they add, and then they say Kaddish Nemborku after that, okay? So God's fine, so I have no objections to saying it. I mean, who says I can't add it? So I add it, I say it, I want to be with the congregation, so these things I do, okay? But now I'll tell you what they did in Kesser against Lubavitch. If you'll take a look in the Nusach Ari Siddur, you'll see that when it comes to Rish Chedesh mention, there's
oh,
no such thing as
son.
He wrote some. It's not there.
Well, that's a German.
Not there.
That's a German custom.
Well, I don't know so much about German, but you won't find the he wrote some over there. It starts simply with, you know, Nishos and right, and that's all. That's all that they have, yeah. Well, obviously.
But they
obvious, huh?
They benched the
yeah, I mean, they still say Rosh Chodesh so and so will be on so and so, okay? But.
But Arthur Levy, for instance, who comes from Frankfurt,
yeah.
tells me that they never said Eurotone in their
possibly.
German,
I'm not sure.
German.
I mean, I've davened occasionally with the Frankfurt Dominion, but you have Frankfurter and Frankfurter also, you know.
Frankfurt. Okay.
I'm not too
if
sure.
They let
about
you daven with them.
I think we need some unification here,
okay,
or
now
standardization.
Obviously, we don't have any
standardization.
Standardization.
Right.
Right. Well, let's put it this way. Thank God everybody's preserving his own customs and keeping it alive.
But you mix up the Rebbeinu Shalom, I'm telling
yeah.
you. He doesn't know who to listen to.
He has a legion
of
Malachim, you know, and this one's in charge of Kesser, and this one's in charge of
Kadima.
Kadima and so on, right?
Is there a question of who is the right one now?
No.
No,
we are very broad-minded and say everybody says the right nusach. Okay, but I've heard, you know, people who daven nusach really say, yeah, it's true, but ours is the greatest nusach.
Okay, I have a question for your son, if I can write your friend. In Israel, I keep hearing about this. I'm not sure I'm saying this. Nusa achud, in other words, a unified nusach.
Yeah, yeah.
What is that then? What is that?
As I said, this is really nusach sfarad.
That is the Nusach?
Right. Not Sfardim.
No, I understand
but
that.
But Sfard, right. In other words, this is the one that they've pretty much adopted, where there is no set tradition for a shul to be this or that or something else, then they adopt the Nusach Sfard. Yeah.
Birnbaum, where it says Birnbaum, and then on the bottom it says Sephardic. That's the Nusach Sfard.
Yeah.
That's all I get.
Right. But it's not the Spanish Portuguese Nusach. It's not the Nusach of Morocco. It's not the Nusach of Syria or Greece or wherever, you know, there are big Sephardic communities of Baghdad or you name it and so on. You go to Eretz Yisrael and you find Sidurim, you know, which are quite different from what we call Nusach Sephard. The wording is quite different. And those are the Sidurim that are used by people who come from the countries that I mentioned. It's not exactly the same as what we follow.
Oh,
yeah.
So what did you call it, David? Nusach what?
I think it's called Nusach
Achud. Achid. Achid would mean, right.
They call it
which
unified
means what?
Version.
Which
means unified means unified version.
Right. Achid is one.
The word
like
Achid.
Like what I thought.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, all right.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay.
All right.
So the question is, if you daven Erev Shabbos, right, while it's still early, so can you make Kiddush and so on, and you know, so the answer is yes, absolutely, which implies, in other words, that you have to be Shabbistic at this particular point. And this is what Shmuel laid down, and it says, you know, in the halacha v'hilchaso kavosei, in the halacha taka follows Shmuel in this case. Now, how about the second case that we mentioned, Rabbi Yoshia, the one who davened Motzoi Shabbos, and he davened it early, Rabbi Yoshia Matzli shall Matzoi Shabbos be Shabbos. Well, it was still Shabbos yet. So the question is, Emor Havdolah Halkoso, Eino Emor Havdolah Halkoso. Should he then recite Havdolah on the wine or not? So what's the story over there? Toshma. So listen, he says, the Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, says, Bispale Lodem Shal Matzoi Shabbos be Shabbos. He says, yeah, a person can take a daven. The Motzei Shabbos Dika Davening while it's still Shabbos, V'yemer Havdolah al Hakos, and he can recite Havdolah on the cup of wine. Mm-hmm. Alright, now, Shmuel says that this is it. The question is, under what circumstances? This is from the point of view of Halacha. We know that, for example, with us, it wouldn't go. We have to wait, you know, until Shabbos is definitely over, and that's why we wait that additional amount of time. So, for example, in our shul, we wait an hour after lift benching. Okay? In some places, they wait even longer than that. They follow Rabbeinu Tam's shita, which says 72 minutes after sunset you have to wait, which is, you know, a much longer period of time than what we're following, because if you remember, when do we bench lift? We said 18 minutes before sunset, right? So that, therefore, when do we say it's Soy Shabbos? We say it's approximately 41, 42 minutes or something like that after sunset. Okay? But if you follow the shit of Rabbeinu Tam that says you have to count 72 minutes, then obviously that's much longer already.
So it's an hour long.
Yeah, right. So it's not necessarily an hour longer, but
almost,
it would be about at least 15 minutes longer than what we observed, at least. Okay.
Well, the 72 minutes less 18.
Yeah.
72 less 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or 68 minutes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So it is longer than what we do. Right.
No. So 58 minutes.
Okay.
Minutes.
But
so
anyway,
it's
longer than what we do. There's no question about it.
I'll give up 2 minutes.
And you know, there are many people who follow the. If you want to be a machmir, you follow Rabbeinu Tam. You see,
4.
Yeah,
it's 18 from 72. It's 54. So you're 6 minutes less than an hour.
Yeah. As I say, there's usually about 12 to 15 minutes difference between the two systems. Okay. All right. So to us, it's unthinkable. So where would Shmuel's dictum apply? it would apply to the following circumstances. There is an emergency. You have to get going sooner as possible. So in that particular in that particular case, you are permitted to daven the Shabbos ticket davening, let's say an hour and a quarter. I mean the Motzei Shabbos ticket davening an hour and a quarter prior to that. You could even say Havdalah over the cup of wine, but obviously what can't you do? You're not allowed to do anything that we consider vachadik. In other words, would you be able to use the candle, for example? No, that you're not allowed to do. Would you be able to jump into your car immediately after finishing Shmoneh Esrei and run and do things or go shopping or whatever it may be? Again, it's no, absolutely not. Not allowed.
What's the point of davening early?
The point is simply that you have a head start on the davening, that's all. That's the point. So that, you know, instead of waiting until, I mean, after all, over here in Shul, let's say, usually we don't begin davening Maariv anything earlier than at least an hour after Licht Benchim. Okay? But, you know, this way, the minute that, let's say, it's an hour after Licht Benchim and you've already davened, so you could begin immediately to do Bochadika things. That's the point. You understand? But you're not allowed to do vachadika things before it actually is dark out, before you know the time is gone, because that is already, that would be a violation of Shabbos, even if you've already done them. I mean, otherwise there would be no kunz. You can do what they do in Bethel in the summertime, for example, daven at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, even though it's still 2 hours before Shabbos is over, you know.
7 o'clock.
Yeah, whatever it is. I know that Herman Abramson had that problem over there.
That's what they do in Bethel?
Yeah. Look, they have rabbis and Shamosim Chazonim to whom it doesn't matter very much, you know. But when you had somebody like Abramson to whom it did matter, I mean, it hurt him. I mean, that they were doubting that earth. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
that's in spite of the fact that Shmuel says that you can make Havdalah and you're even permitted to make Havdalah on the cup of wine, but still it doesn't mean that you can do Vachadika things prior to the end of Shabbos. Omer Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera said, Omer Rabbi Yasi, Omer Rabbi Elozer, Omer Rabbi Hanino, Omer Rav. He's one. Who said it? Right. So
he's
finally comes down to Rav. So he says, Chutzad Omud Zeh. Said right next to this column in the base medrash, of course, his palel Rabbi Yishmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Yosi, daven shel Shabbos v'erev Shabbos. Right, he daven the Shabbos tikkun davenin erev Shabbos. So, in other words, what is the story telling us? That not only Rav did it, but Rav also had precedence for it. That this, you know, Rabbi Yishmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, who had, you know, lived in the previous generation, also did the same thing, and he saw, you know, that he used to stand next to this pillar in the shul and the daven over there. He also Ulo, when Ulo came, he said Omer Bitzad Tamora Havi. He says no, first of all it wasn't right next to a column, you know, Bitzad Tamora Havi Ulo Bitzad Omer, rather he would stand right next to a date tree, a date palm, and not next to the pillar. Below Rabbi Yishmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, and besides, it wasn't Rabbi Yishmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. Elo Rabbi Elozer b'Rabbi Yosi haba, but rather it was Rabbi Elozer b'Rabbi Yosi. Okay, so it wasn't Rabbi Yishmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, it was Rabbi Elozer b'Rabbi Yosi. Maybe they were brothers, I suppose. Below shall Shabbos be Shabbos, and besides, the davening that we're talking about was not the Erev Shabbos Tikkun Davening, that is the davening on Erev Shabbos, the Shabbos Tikkun Davening, Elo Shemotzoi Shabbos B'Shabbos Haba. But rather, he was davening the Motzoi Shabbos Tikkun Davening while it was still Shabbos. Okay.
According
to him, it's to prove the fact, you know, as what Shmuel said before, namely that you're permitted to do. But again, I say, it doesn't mean that you have carte blanche to do it. All it means is that in an emergency, you could daven Maariv a little bit earlier, instead of waiting, you know, for the time that the congregation normally finishes. so that you could leave immediately as soon as Shabbos is officially over.
The difference between the 72 minutes after sunset and what we do.
Yeah.
Could you just go over how this works?
Yeah. Okay. Our system, Motzoi Shabbos, is to go an hour after Lichtbenchen. Okay. Right. Now, if Lichtbenchen, let's say, is at 5 o'clock,
right.
So it means that Shabbos doesn't end until 6 o'clock. Okay?
Right.
That's our system. But remember that when we bench Licht, we are benching Licht actually 18 minutes prior to sunset. So in other words, how much difference is there between sunset and the time that we say Shabbos is out? So the answer is roughly 41, 42 minutes or something like that, okay? In the 40-minute area, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. But what does Rabbeinu Tam say? He says that you have to wait 72 minutes from the time that it's sunset until Tzeis HaKof Avim. This, according to him, this is when the stars are definitely out and Shabbos is definitely over. By the way, according to him, it applies also to saying Ma'ariv too. I mean, if, you know, in the week, it's not just a question of Shabbos, but during the week too. I mean, this is his opinion.
But isn't then the difference a half hour? Isn't the difference between 42 minutes and 72 minutes? Well, am I missing this?
No. I mean, we're starting from the same point. We're starting from sunset, okay? So I said, all right, let's say that's 5 good. O'clock is sunset, okay?
Right.
So
we're
just an example.
We're talking about
so
left.
We would say then,
five,
excuse me, 5 o'clock is Lichtbenchen, you're right,
right
okay?
Right.
Starting from
which means then, right, that Licht.
Not from sunset.
Right, from Lichtbenchen, all right? So that's
starting
15
minutes.
Right.
How much? 18 minutes before
18
sunset.
Minutes, right. Okay.
So
that the sunset is actually at 5:18, okay?
Right.
And then we add another 40 minutes approximately, or 42 minutes approximately. So that brings us to 6 o'clock, okay?
How much total minutes are there?
That's
42
minutes. That's 42 minutes after sunset.
Yeah. Correct.
Right.
So
okay.
42 and
6. You're right. I mean...
And the other...
Yeah, Rabbeinu Tam, right.
The other sheet says 72 minutes.
72 minutes from sunset in reality, yeah. So it would really be about a half hour longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, for practical purposes, I can tell you that it usually comes to about more of 15 minutes. Maybe he takes it also from the convention and adds 72 minutes instead of the 42 that we do. Something like that, okay? I mean, instead of the hour that we count from Lichtbenchen, so he makes it an hour and 12 minutes or something
like
that.
Yeah, that I could understand.
Yeah.
That would make more sense. For the 18 minutes, then an hour after that.
Yeah.
It'd be an hour and 18 minutes.
Okay, let's learn a little bit more. And we'll start a new Indian over here. And
some other rabbi, like, might have done this, makes it. But he has to have a good reason for doing it. Maybe he was making a mistake too, and someone else observed it and said, "Oh, if he does it, we can do it too."
Okay. No, but the point is, when he did it, he didn't do it as a mistake. He did it deliberately, knowing what the din was, and he followed obviously then the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. That's all. As to when Mincha ends and Ma'ariv begins.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
So he's davening Ma'ariv early.
Right. Right. So according to this, you know, the same
Shabbos.
Thing, just as you can do it Arab Shabbos, you can do it Motzei Shabbos. Right.
So the reason for this doing is, let's say, after you had a sick child, you could do the davening early.
Right.
As soon as it was really our time to do Havdalah, you could be really ready to getting
Correct.
Things ready, getting
Correct.
Things ready,
Correct.
Ready in the car. As
Absolutely.
Soon as it was the right
yeah.
time, you could.
Right.
You
know, right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the idea.
All right.
All right, now we start a brand new Inyan, and this is very, very dramatic over here.
Right.
Okay, all right, well, let's start it.
You know, it's hard.
Especially because for the next 2 weeks, we're bombed out, you know.
Why is that?
Well, you know, next week, Wednesday night, is the Chevra Kadisha dinner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then 2 weeks from tonight is Purim.
Are they sold out for the Hebrew condition?
Don't ask me. I know nothing about that.
Will this take a long time to go through?
It's a very dramatic story that goes into part of the next page. It covers a great deal of it, okay.
Oh.
But it moves fast at this particular point, too. All right, so let's try to get a little bit more yet tonight.
Yes.
go until 9 o'clock. Okay. All right. The Mishnah said that Tfilas Erev Ein Lo Keva, which means literally the Ma'ariv davening, it has no fixed measure. Okay, Ein Lo Keva. So now they want a definition. Now, how did we understand it? We had said at that time Ein Lo Keva, you know, that you could daven, in other words, all night long. This is what we had said. Okay. This is how we had interpreted when we had it in the Mishnah. Right. Yeah, right. That's Krishma. Okay. But we're talking about Shemoneh Esrei over here. Okay. And we said again that Ein Lo Keva, which means it doesn't have anything fixed about it. And the proof that they gave was again from the Korbanos, if you remember.
Right.
What did they say? They said that the things that were left over from the sacrifices during the day could be burnt on the altar all night. Okay, so therefore, since that's the case, it means that you could daven any time during the night, the Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, this is the way we had understood it, but now they're not altogether happy with that interpretation. They want to give a different interpretation. So they say, Eilema, if you are to say the Iboy Matzli Kuli Lailo, that if he wants he can daven all night long, then listenate philosopher of Kalalila. Then let the language say not Ein Lo Keva, but let it say specifically to philosopher that the evening prayer is called Halila. You can say it all night long. Okay. So why does it say Ein Lo Keva? This is the question. Okay. Elamai Ein Lo Keva says Keman the Omar. So he says that's in accordance with the scholar who said, according to the sage who said, the philos Arvis Rishus, who said that the Shemoneh Esrei of Ma'ariv, this is voluntary and not obligatory. The Omer Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shmuel, as Rabbi Yehuda said, the name is Shmuel, says Tfilas Arvis, as far as the Shemoneh Esrei of Ma'ariv is concerned, Rabban Gamliel Omer Choyvo, Rabban Gamliel says that it is obligatory to say it, and Rabbi Yehoshua Omer Rishus, and Rabbi Yehoshua said that it is voluntary. Omer Abaye, and Abaye said, Halacha k'divrei Omer Chova. Abaye says that Halacha follows those who say that it is obligatory. The Rava Omar, and Rava said, Halacha k'divrei Omer Rishus. He says that Halacha follows the opinion which says that it is voluntary. So now we don't know. Is the Shemoneh Esrei of Ma'ariv, is it obligatory to recite it, or is it voluntary? So, Tana Rabbah. So now they tell us a story to try to explain this better. Sages taught us, Ma Seva Talmid Echa. The story about a certain Talmid, Shebolof Ne Rabbi Yeshua. He came to Rabbi Yeshua, Normalay, and he said to him, tell me, he says, Tefilas Arvis Rishus Ochova. Tell me, my master, he says, is Ma'ariv, is it voluntary or is it obligatory? Normalay, so of course Rabbi Yeshua said to him, Rishus.
Obligatory.
No, contrary. Rabbi Yeshua is the one who said it's Rishus.
Oh, okay. Rishus.
So he's being consistent with his
Rishus
point of view,
right.
And he says it's voluntary. What if they Rabbi Gamliel? Then the same Talmud came to Rabbi Gamliel, Omale, and he said to him, Tefilas Arvis Rishus Ochova. Is, the Ma'ariv Shemoneh Esrei, is it voluntary or is it obligatory? Omale, so he said to him, Chova. So Amalo, so then this Talmud said to him, Hello Rabbi Yeshua, Amali Rishus, didn't Rabbi Yeshua say to me that it is Rishus? So needless to say, Rabbi Gamliel, who was the head of the Sanhedrin at that time, he was deeply offended that this guy comes and he quotes Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, which is contrary to him. Okay? So Amalo, so he said unto him, Hamtein achi yekonsu bali trisin leveis hamidus. Wait, he says, until literally the shield bearers, in other words, the great Talmidim come into the Beis Medrash. Kishenich the Subali Trisin, so when they came in into the Beis Medrash, Omad HaShoel, so this fellow who had asked the Shaila stood up, Vishawal, and he asked this question again before all of them, right? The Tefilas Arvis Rishus Ochova, is Ma'ariv, voluntary or is it obligatory? Omale Rabbi Gamliel Chova. So then Rabbi Gamliel said to him, it is obligatory. Omalehem Rabbi Gamliel Chachomim. Then Rabbi Gamliel said to the Chachomim,
Kolum yesh adam shechaylek b'davod zeh. Is there any man who disagrees with me in this? Omale Rabbi Yeshua, lav. So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, no. Obviously, why did Rabbi Yeshua say that to him? Didn't want to offend him. Didn't want to insult the head of the yeshiva. So he said, no. Omale. So Rabbi Gamliel said to him, halo mishimcha omrali, didn't they tell me in your name, Rishus? Omale Yeshua. Omaleis, and then he said to him, Yeshua Amodarag Lecho. He says, stand up. He says, V'yayidu b'cho, and let, you know, your fellow sages testify against you. Omar Rabbi Yeshua Raglo. So Rabbi Yeshua stood on his feet, to got up. V'yomar, and he said, Ilmolei ani chai v'hu meis. If I were alive and he, meaning, you know, the person who quoted me, were dead, then yochol achai lehachichishas hameis. Then the person who is alive can deny what the dead person has said. The Akshav, however, now, She'ani chai v'uchai, inasmuch as I am alive and he is alive, Eich yochel achai l'hachichisha sachai. How can a living person deny, you know, what another living person has said? So in other words, he's not denying it, okay? Oye Rabbi Gamliel Yoshev. So Rabbi Gamliel was sitting and, you know, interpreting Torah for Rabbi Yeshua Umidah Raglov. And Rabbi Yeshua is left standing on his feet, Ad Shavininu Kol Ho'om, until everybody started to murmur, the Yomer L'Chutzpas HaTargumun, and they said to Chutzpas, who was the Turgamon, he was the one. The system in those days was that the Rebbe would talk to the Turgamon, Turgamon would talk aloud to everybody, explain what the Rebbe was saying.
What
okay?
is the Turgamon? Translator.
Literally translator. It's not necessarily translator over here, but it means the person who... they didn't have, you know, let's say, loudspeakers in those days, okay? So the custom was that the Rebbe, for example, would whisper or talk softly into the ear of the Turgamon, and then the Turgamon had a good long, you know, good loud voice, so he could be heard throughout the entire Beis Medrash. So this was his job. Of course, there are other jobs for Turgamons too. As for example, they used to have the custom, let's say, of reading the Torah, and then the Turgamon would give an Aramaic translation. That was also an ancient custom that he would translate. Of course, the question is, should it be done verse by verse, or should it be done, let's say, three verses in the Hebrew and then done in the Aramaic? But then that's besides. Here, as I say, Turgamon is fulfilling the role that he is the public declaimer, if you wish, of what the rabbi is telling him. Okay? So they said to Chutzpis, the Turgamon, they said, Amod, literally stand, but here it means stop. Okay? The Amod. And so he did that. Amrei, and then, you know, they kept on talking, and they said, Akamanit Sarei Benezel, how long will he continue, that is, how long will Rabbi Gamliel continue to pain, to make life miserable for Rabbi Yehoshua? Berosh Hashanah Ishtakei, on Rosh Hashanah last year, Tziarei Bivichora, Tziarei, at that time he caused him pain. Okay, the incident that happened over there is that, according to Rabbi Yeshua, Yom Kippur, this is mentioned in Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, okay, that Rabbi Gamliel decided that the new month, that is the month of Tishrei, began on this and this day of the week, and Rabbi Yeshua said that no, it was a mistake, it began on a different day. So as a result, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Gamliel ordered Rabbi Yehoshua to come and appear before him on the day when, according to Rabbi Yehoshua's calculations, it was Yom Kippur, and he should come dressed in vochadika things, bearing a sack on it and his stick, and so, you know, things that he normally wouldn't do. And Rabbi Yehoshua complied in order not to cause, you know, a split among the people of Israel. So he complied. But needless to say, he felt bad about the whole incident. So this is